Hi, I'm Ryan Recker, your host for the Business of Family Business. It's presented by CMA Consulting, and we highlight the family business stories from across the St. Louis region. And today, you're going to hear the story of Metro Lighting. First founded as the St. Louis Electric Company in the 1960s, Bill Frisella and Sarah King join us today, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, to tell their story on this week's edition of the Business of Family Business. So, Bill, let me start with you, with the St. Louis Electric Supply. When was that founded?
It was founded in 1967.
Mm-hmm. The industry probably looked a lot different then.
Oh, it was completely different.
Yeah. When you walked into a house, everything was different. The way you would...
Certainly. And it was the electrical supply. It wasn't lighting business. So it was quite a bit different.
So what kind of things did the company do at that point?
Well, I was still in school at that time.
Yeah.
I was a sophomore in college, I believe. And so I joined a company like 2 or 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
The company... Originally, who we bought it from,
mm-hmm.
So we didn't actually start it, but almost. There was a George and Nora Conley that lived on Arthur Avenue near Watson Road in South St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
and they ran St. Louis Electric Supply out of their basement and mm-hmm. their garage.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what would happen is if you're an electrician, you're on a job, and you forgot, say, some wire nuts or a box of wire,
mm-hmm.
you would call George or Nora, and they'd put that wire in their pickup truck, and off to your job site they went, delivered your wire, so you wouldn't have to come off the job.
Hmm.
So George had a stroke, and my father was an electrical contractor, and he financed the purchase of St. Louis Electric Supply for $17,430. I'll never forget that.
The exact number.
Yeah, and he brought on my brother Jim, mm-hmm. since I was in college, and my uncle Charlie in as operating partners.
Okay.
So the three of them actually started the business, and I came on like 2 years later after I graduated from school.
Did your dad know George ahead of time?
Oh, yeah. He used George all the time.
Oh, so he was a customer.
Yeah.
Oh.
My father was a customer of George and Nora.
So when that happened, they were already friendly, they had a relationship, and he knew the business. So when that circumstance came up, did your father approach them, or maybe did George approach your father?
No, I believe the way it happened was George called my dad and said, "Hey, John, you have all these kids. Would any of them be interested in buying my business? I had this stroke, and I just can't do it anymore."
What did you study in college?
Well, I have a BS in marketing, and I've got a minor in history down at Missouri State University.
So you didn't necessarily study electrical engineering or anything electrical at that point?
No, but all through grade school and high school and college, during the summers, I was an electrician.
Mm.
Even in grade school, I'd be out in the warehouse separating wire nuts and connectors and different types of wires. So I grew up in the industry.
Yeah, so you kind of knew what was going on.
Certainly. Mm-hmm.
Did your father encourage you to take that line of work? Did he want you to become an electrician?
Well, initially when I got out of school, I became the, I worked for the Soccer Stars. I was director of season tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't care for that. And he kept on mentioning, "You ought to come to work for St. Louis Electric. You ought to come to work for us,"
mm-hmm.
and which I did eventually.
Right. How long did it stay St. Louis Electric Company before it turned into Metro Lighting?
I think it was about 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and we opened our first branch in Fenton, Missouri, mm-hmm. and we called that Metro.
Okay.
And then St. Louis Electric was the headquarters, and then we opened a branch throughout the years, and they were called Metro.
So it started to almost phase that way. It was phasing.
Yes.
Which is, I think, an electrical term, too, isn't it?
Yeah.
It could be
very
a pun
good.
There. So with that, your father, how long was he in the business? Like, did he own the business up until he retired?
Well, my father actually never worked the business.
Oh.
The first 2 or 3 years, Charlie and Jim did, and then I came on, and the three of us ran it for a long time, eventually bought out Charlie before I got ownership. And I guess about maybe 10 years later, Jim wanted to become partners, and I became partners with Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie was still working for us, but he was not a partner any longer.
Okay, so the business has seen some influx when it comes to family.
Sure.
Do you guys still hire family now?
Yeah, we do. And in most cases, it works out pretty good, but I don't think I would suggest it to everyone.
Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, it can create problems.
Yeah.
It can create problems.
How do you separate the business and the family life? Is it hard sometimes?
In a lot of cases, I try not to be a family member's boss.
Mm-hmm.
So when they get in trouble or if they need to get corrected, It's not me doing the correcting.
Mm-hmm.
It's someone else. So then that family member is mad at somebody else and not me.
Yeah.
So then at Christmas, everything's hunky-dory.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, I want to talk to you about that strategy. That seems like it's a pretty good idea in a lot of different family structures.
That's a pretty good idea from Bill's perspective as the CEO and the owner. I'm not sure those non-family members who get to manage family members feel this is the absolute best arrangement because they're kind of put in the hot seat because they have a family member potentially mad at them. So it's hard to figure out where everybody wins in this scenario because who manages a younger family member entering the business is always a risky proposition. So usually there has to be an agreement between Bill and that non-family manager. Hey, here's how we're going to do this. Here's the parameters. And Bill needs to assure those managers you're not taking any career risk by having a family member report to you.
Mm. Sarah, you also work with Metro Lighting. You're in studio. What is your role with the company?
I'm in charge of marketing and special events.
What year did you start?
June of 2003.
Okay, so you've been doing it for a long time. You've seen a lot of changes in marketing when it comes to social media importance since then.
Yes. I actually started in 1999 at an ad agency and then came over to Metro in 2003. So I've had a general idea of regular life outside of family business and then came to Metro. And there have been a lot of changes from 1999 to now, for sure.
There's a lot of changes in every industry if you go back, you know, some 30, 40, 50 years. Originally, you said George was running the operation out of his house. When did you guys actually open up a storefront?
In 1967.
Yeah, 67. What location was that?
It was 6747 Arsenal Street.
Okay.
Probably about three or four blocks from where George's house was, where he ran a business.
Okay.
Yeah. It was 2,500 square feet, so it wasn't a large location.
Yeah. What's around that area?
That address is between Jameson and Watson.
Okay.
So it's by LaRusso's, if you know where that is.
Is that storefront, did it work out pretty well having the actual storefront? Because it sounds like the business model before was someone would call you up, they would deliver it. That probably changed the business model a little bit, being able to open things up.
Yeah, but I think the contractors that George dealt with still relied on us to give them that super service. We call it the hot shot business.
Yeah.
Where they don't want to pull an electrician off the job because, you know, they're costing, well, back then maybe $20 an hour. Now it's more like $100.
Mm-hmm.
But then we expanded from there, and we started doing stock business with contractors and filling their needs. So we expanded from there.
Yeah.
It was such a small location that when we cut wire, we'd have to pull it out of the building and up the sidewalk. We had the sidewalk all marked.
So when you go out front, that was you actually like just was it sidewalk chalk or something?
And
you
would, we actually put little marks on it.
You know, you'd put the marks on
25, 50, 75. Some of the big cuts, man, we really had to go up the street.
It worked there, though. It worked there. What was the longest strip of wire you'd have to go?
Like, oh, I think well over 100 feet.
You may even remember calling the St. Louis Electric Company and then bringing supplies to your home. But what happened after Bill Frisella and his family took over the business? We're going to find out next on The Business of Family Business, telling the story of family businesses from across the region. And today we're highlighting Metro Lighting on KMOX. And the show is presented by CMA Consulting. You probably knew this already if you're a family business. And I would say the reason they're the best is because they do the things that aren't obvious. Simply put, CMA has the experience and the expertise to set your company upright. I want you to imagine what it's like to be a business owner ready to retire. Probably something on your mind if you're a business owner right now. What happens after you? CMA Consulting is leading a multidisciplinary team to help family businesses unify the next generation and also develop them to be effective owners, or in some cases, find the next effective owner to align your generation to the next generation. Talent experts, tax and accounting and legal and banking and risk management. It's not an easy thing to do. You got a lot on your mind. CMA excels in helping increase the odds of a successful generational transition and also keeping family harmony in check. Contact CMA for a complimentary no obligation meeting to discuss your family business and upcoming generational transition or the benefits of the Business of Family Business Ownership Program. Go to cmaconsult.com or call 314-721-8255. 1860 if you want to talk to Dan Bean and you want to discuss some of the things that you've been running over and over and over in your mind. CMAconsult.com is the website. It's a family affair. Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and you're hearing the story of the St. Louis Electric Company. Well, that's what they were called back in the 60s, and eventually, how you know them today, Metro Lighting, joined in studio with Sarah King and Bill Frisella. Originally, it was your uncles that were involved in the business. Are you a 100% owner now in the company?
Yes. Originally, it was my father, my brother, and my uncle.
Your brother and your uncle, right. Okay.
Yeah. And then my brother bought out my uncle
before
I was an owner. And then my brother Jim and I became partners.
Okay.
And we stayed partners until 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, Jim kind of wanted to either own it all himself or not at all. So we had a buy-sell agreement. And he made me an offer. And mm-hmm. I said, well, it's a fair offer. And I decided to buy him out.
Okay.
So he retired at that point.
When you say buy-sell agreement, could you explain that a little?
Well, you make an offer to your partner.
Right.
And let's say I'm going to buy you out, Dan. Mm-hmm. And let's say I offer Dan $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan says, well, okay, I'll take that $1 million. Or he doesn't have to. You know, mm-hmm. he can buy me out for the million. So it's a pretty fair way to do it.
So Dan, being from CMA Consulting, is that pretty common, a provision like that?
Yeah, particularly when there's no established method to value the business. This is where one owner makes up a number that I'm willing to sell or willing to buy. It has to be comfortable either way. So one owner puts a number on the table, then the other owner decides to buy or sell.
Okay.
So that encourages the first owner to put a very fair number on the table.
Because
I don't know if I'm going to buy or sell.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other owner has the option of buying or selling. So it's a way to make sure that a number is put on the table without knowing which side of the fence I'm on, buying or selling.
Mm-hmm.
So that first person that puts that number out is going to live with that buy or sell. So they're trying to get the absolute fairest number they can.
Right. It almost sounds like Price is Right, where you try to get as close as you can without going over.
it's a way to manage the dynamics that otherwise could get very destructive.
Right. Yeah. Understood.
And so, Bill, it worked, right?
Yeah, it worked. It worked good. Jim's happy. I'm happy. And I think the employees were all happy.
And there are other ways to structure a buy-sell. Mm-hmm. This is a fairly typical way, but there are other ways to value a business and other factors to consider. So it really depends on the type of business drives the type of buy-sell you have.
Right.
But every family business who has multiple owners ought to have a buy-sell.
Okay. At this point in the business's history, were there any other family members in the business?
We have 10 that are working in the business now. And at the time of the buyout,
right,
it was probably 3 or 4, maybe 5.
Do they find themselves, like, do they come to you and they say, well, you know, 10 family members in the business, I guess it's my turn?
Oh, yeah. We get requests all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's not an opening, we don't even, you know, take a look at it. But we put them on the list. And But we try not to hire any more family members.
Yeah.
Because it is problematic at times, as Dan can tell you here.
Do you have a big family?
I'm one of 12 kids.
12.
I have 4 kids.
Uh-huh.
2 of the kids are in the business.
Okay.
My son Nicholas, Sarah's brother, he runs our energy department.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah does the marketing.
Bill, when it comes to the different departments and the different aspects of your company, there's really, I guess, 4 different main focuses. Can you talk about those and define what they are?
Certainly. Originally, we were electrical supply only.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think in 1977, we bought a distributor out in Arnold, Missouri, that had a little 1,000-foot showroom, lighting showroom. And that's how we got into the lighting business. And we did that for a couple years, along with the electrical distributorship that was came along with the lighting showroom. And we kind of liked the business. The margins were a little bit fatter. And so we then opened up in St. Peter's, Missouri. And at that time, it was really expanding at a rapid pace. So that was our second showroom. And we liked that even more because a lot of business going up there. And the margins were, you know, probably twice as strong as the electrical margins. And so that's the electrical. Then we, in '67, when we bought the Arnold location, we got involved in the lighting. And then that lighting can be divided into 2 sections also, one being retail to the general public and one being to the builders and rehabbers and developers. Mm-hmm. So, and then the last one is taking care of all the commercial real estate that we own mm-hmm. as operating properties of these businesses. So really it's four distinct businesses. But and there's a lot of moving parts, mm-hmm. and you can get everything right. But when that customer walks through the door and wants a light fixture or wants a roll of wire, you know, they better get treated right by our employees. And we train our employees about customer service, and they do a great job. Mm-hmm. I mean, we stumble at times, but it's all about customer service. You can have 1,000 moving parts, but when, you know, when the rubber hits the street, it's the customer and our employee, and you got to have that right also.
In a digital world, too, when people are so easy to, they'll take something and run with it, it's probably very important that you offer customer service, probably in the advent of the internet.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah, that changes a lot of it, too. I bet, mm-hmm. Sarah, in that case, customer service becomes ultimately, for you guys, very important to reach out and stay actively talking to your customers.
It's a huge part, especially with the review-based websites that are out there, mm-hmm. because most of the time, if you have a great experience, you leave happy and
you don't say
you're
anything.
Great.
Yeah.
But if you have a if something, you know, rubbed you the wrong way, or if you know your light fixture didn't come in when we said it would, people are sore and they lash out on the internet. And so it's very important that we try our best to make everything right. And I think that we do a good job bending over backwards, trying to make something that was wrong right. Mm-hmm. And because it's so important and crucial to our business. And we have 150 employees, and you know, each review, it really is a huge bullet, mm-hmm. if it's negative. So we have to
encourage people to leave positive comments, especially
right.
if they have a positive experience. It's
right.
not always easy, because if you're happy, you don't normally do anything.
Right.
Sarah, how important do you find like the feedback of people that come to the business? Do you find right now everyone wants that energy efficient stuff? Do you see that people are like reaching out to you, asking you questions on social media? Because there's probably a lot of people out there that are upgrading things and they have a lot of questions, and they probably reach out to you electronically to ask those things that probably encourage them to come into the store and look at things too.
Nick does a great job of, because he also does social media with me, because mm-hmm. he speaks to those questions a lot better than I do.
Right.
And so he does a great job responding, giving an explanation of how people can make their home more efficient, their business more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
He works closely with Ameren, with other utilities, because there are so many...
There's a lot of rebates things that they offer,
Yep, incentives right now. And he's on top of all that kind of stuff. So when people reach out, and we also have the team that goes out and tries to... educate people on, mm-hmm. on what can change, just little changes that make a big difference.
Yeah. When you start marketing on social media, what kind of things do people like to talk about on there? And what are the things that you see are, you know, an effective way to get people to talk about the business?
Well, our primary demographic, our main customer is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
People love talking about homes, their home design, what lighting they have, what lighting they want. So
okay.
a lot of times on our social media, we'll say, you know, what's your favorite light in your home? And people will put pictures. People will talk about, mm-hmm. I want this light. I saw this light. I want that. I want this. So I think a lot of times people respond to the latest designs, the latest trends. We go to Dallas Market in January and in June. And so we know what's up and coming and what's trending. And we'll put that on our social media, and people really respond to, mm-hmm. oh, that's awesome. I'm not really a fan of that. And being in St. Louis, sometimes the trends take a little bit of time to trickle to the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Do you find networks like HGTV, do they motivate people to come in and try something new in their house?
You know, I haven't directly seen that, but I do think that it is inspirational, and people see those shows and see how easy it is to, you know, just paint a room and switch out a light fixture and really make a difference. So I think it is helpful to our industry.
Yeah, Bill, as someone that's worked in it, you probably realize as fast as they can edit something on television, people get the wrong impression how long it takes to service some of these things inside of a home. It's pretty, you know, when you only get a half an hour and they cut something and makes it look like you can get it done in a day, it doesn't always work like that. So how many physical locations do you have?
We have 8 electrical supply counters where electricians come, and then we have 6 lighting showrooms where either builders or the retail public come.
Right. That's a lot. That's a lot of buildings to maintain.
Yeah, it sure is.
One's enough, but you know, you have all these other ones too. I want to know more about when Bill decided to expand Metro Lighting. We're going to hear that story coming up on the Business of Family Business presented by CMA Consulting, telling the stories of local family businesses from all across the St. Louis region. And if you're a family business and you would like to share your story, we want to hear it. Reach Dan Bean at cmaconsulting.com. Just reach out to Dan Bean and let him know you're interested. cmaconsult.com is the website. Telling the story of family businesses from all across the region. This is the Business of Family Business, and you can even listen back to previous episodes at KMOX.com in the podcast section. Just click the Business of Family Business button and you'll get it right there. And if you'd like to participate, you're a family business, maybe you know a family business that would fit this program, we would like to hear from you. Reach out to Dan Bean at CMAconsulting.com. We're joined again with Sarah King and Bill Frisella from Metro Lighting. When did you actually start to expand? Was it after you started owning the company when you started to go into all these other divisions?
Well, I think it was right around 1976 when we opened the Fenton Metro location. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of customers down in that area. You know, we were all about service, service, service. And we started generating customers from Fenton and Arnold and Jefferson County that would have to drive all the way in to our Arsenal location. So we wanted to give them better service. So we opened that Fenton location where they could, you know, 5-minute drive and they're there. So it's all about service. Mm-hmm. So that was in 1976.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I want to kind of talk to you about this. When you see the organic growth and then you have, for example, a transition in the company, this started even before then. When you see a company grow like this and they're able to service all these different areas, one of the things you mentioned was the commercial side, the commercial side. How many times do you find that people don't understand everything that goes into a family business because there's a lot of aspects and a lot of dynamics into it? Because a lot of times people just walk into a store and that's all they see, but there's so much more that goes on behind the scenes.
So if you just go from a customer perspective, most every customer's view of a business is shaped by what they experience in their interaction with that business. Mm-hmm. If I buy this service, that's what they do. Mm-hmm. They might provide a whole array of other services, but because I don't use those, particularly if I'm not plugged into their marketing or there's not a lot of interaction with me, I don't assume they don't do anything other than what I use. So what Bill and the family have done is they have looked at the market and they've said there's a commercial market and there's a retail market, and we're going to structure our business so when it comes to lighting, we go to the market in 2 distinct channels, 2 distinct ways. They also have electric supply that serves a different market segment, and then they have the commercial real estate, which is more an internal that just manage. I assume it just manages your own real estate. You're not managing real estate for others.
No, just us.
Yeah, so that's a captive company just to serve the family business. Yeah.
I got a question for you, Bill. When it comes to Metro Lighting, when you talk about people going to school for this sort of trade, do you see there's more or less people that are skilled doing this sort of thing today than there was, let's say, 40 years ago?
On the lighting side, in the last 10 years, it has changed dramatically with the advent of LED and energy-saving products. And you need an education in LEDs, and you know there's a lot of things to learn. There's lumen output, there's color output, Kelvin output, there's a CRI number that you try to hit. So there's a lot of education involved in the lighting side, and also on the electric. I mean, it's the same thing. Things are evolving so fast, just like these iPhones, you know, 15 years ago. They weren't around.
Right.
And that's what's happening in our industry, both on the electrical side and the lighting side.
Yeah. I've kind of heard that there's less people going to schools to be an electrician. And sometimes that hurts the demand. So you have less people in an area to do that. And that's why sometimes when you call a company and they say, I'm so busy, I wish I can come out and talk to you, but I just have too much business. I didn't know if there was less people in the industry today that are working as electricians than there were maybe back when you were doing it.
Yeah, I think you have a point there. But I think the trend is reversing now.
Oh,
and I think more and more people are getting into the trades than maybe 15 or 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But Initially, when I got in the business, everybody wanted to be an electrician. Mm-hmm. It was like one of the top 10 jobs you could have in America, really.
Yeah.
If you look down the list. And then it kind of, people started shying away from becoming electricians. And now it's starting to reverse. And I think more and more people are wanting to become an electrician or getting into the industry.
Yeah. Do you have any lights in your house that's controlled by an app?
Yeah, I've got several.
That's another growing trend, too. People are, everything's app-based, and you can work on those.
Security system, garage doors.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a ton of stuff in my house.
What was that, Sarah?
I said a home automation system.
Yeah, home automation. Is that a part of your business, too? You have to adapt to those type of trends?
It is. There's always something new coming out, and home automation is so new that even the manufacturers that are selling it are learning how to use it. So we have to rely on our manufacturers to teach us how to teach our customers. So it's so quickly evolving, and there's so much new information that it's really important that our training is ongoing and consistent, and it's a challenge.
Well, I saw videos online where people would post, they would set up their little Alexa Amazon device, and they have them where they're almost like outlets where you can say, Alexa, turn on my Christmas tree, which would trigger the home automation to turn on a certain outlet in your house, which would, it's amazing how those things work anymore.
Sure is.
Nobody will have to leave the couch ever.
Never, ever again.
You can order your groceries, turn on your lights, watch television.
As long as you're within earshot, they can pick up those things. I'm scared about things like that. Bill, I want to talk to you about the future of the company, because just like you were at a position where your father bought the St. Louis Electric Supply, and there was a point where it was between you and your brother. What happens to you in the future? Have you thought about what happens when maybe you're ready to turn the company over to someone else?
Well, you know, we think about it all the time, and I've been thinking about it, you know, for 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's
that
a number of things that we've done. Well, you know, you can't fool Mother Nature. We all get older, and I know what's going to happen sooner or later. We've created an operating board of directors, and that includes two of our general managers, the general manager of our electrical side and our lighting side.
Mm-hmm.
We've got our CFO, and we've got our executive vice president and one other key employee, and we meet regularly, basically discuss the direction of the company.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is, if I wanted to take things easier, or if I got hit by a bus, this operating board could continue the company forward into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I want to retire, the operating board could do the same thing, and they could report to an executive board, which would include me, my family, immediate family, and maybe my banker and my lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the executive board that the operating board would report to.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we have planned, mostly if I get hit by a bus. But there's other options. I mean, there's an ESOP, which would be beneficial to the employees, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the more outstanding employees, because they get paid substantially more than, say, entry-level employees, I think they would benefit the most, and I think they would like that. And I think all the employees actually would like that. That's an option. And then just an outright sale. I mean, a month doesn't go by without somebody knocking on the door saying, are you interested in selling?
Wow.
Especially as, I don't know, it must be a secret how old you are. Once I hit 60, they started knocking like every 2 weeks. So anyway, there's some options there.
Yeah, probably because it's a lot easier to, let's say, take the investment to purchase a company than it is to start one from scratch. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, you heard the different options there. Let me just start with a general question. How impressive is it that people are thinking about this sort of thing? Because not every company thinks about it in this way and they're proactive about it.
When you hit age 60, Bill mentioned that age, every family business ought to have a plan.
Right.
Because that question is running around the employees' minds, and it's grapevine conversation starting from the mid-50s forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody is asking that question. Clients start to wonder about that. Vendors start to be concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a proactive plan really helps a business in terms of continuity and attracting clients, keeping employees, and making sure everything is moving forward together. So I really take my hat off to Bill and to Sarah and the family for having a plan, and they have to have a plan succession. They also have to have an emergency succession plan in case something unexpected happens, and hopefully you never have to use that second plan.
Right.
But in terms of options, in a general sense, for almost all family businesses, they can own and operate it. That's one option. Number two, they can own it but have a non-family member operate it, manage it, lead it. Number three, they can sell to selected employees. You called it an operating board. I'd probably call it a management team. They're running the business day to day. That can be an ownership group. Number four, you can become an ESOP. ESOP is a formal plan to sell to all employees. Number five would be sell on the market. So you sell to a competitor, a private equity firm, somebody else completely unrelated to the business. And the last option, the least desirable, is just to close the doors. You get nothing for your asset except fire sale price or liquidation prices on that last one. So that's always the least desirable.
We're joined one last time with Sarah King and Bill Frisella. They're with Metro Lighting, telling their local family business story and what they've done over the years and maybe the future of the company as well. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting joins us too, and they present this show, The Business of Family Business. If you have a family business and you would like to tell your family business story, reach out to Dan Bean at cmaconsult.com. Or maybe you have a question for him. Maybe you're ready to think about what happens next, because two-thirds of family businesses, they don't make the generational transition, meaning that when it's time for a family business owner to step down, some family businesses, they identify that they want to give it to the next generation. They want to find a successor. But very few actively work to unify the next generation and develop them to be effective owners. Let me tell you about CMA Consulting and the Business of Family Business Ownership Program. Each session is designed as a critical topic to support effective family business ownership and also unify the next generation, with experts providing different topics to bring the family together and make sure they're all on the same page. Because the worst thing that could happen is maybe there is a generational transition and they might have been effective in their leadership position before the ownership, but afterwards they may need a little extra guidance. How about you set them up for success? When was the last time you and your family members sat down in the business and discussed how to apply insights into the business? Don't wait any longer. Unify, develop, align. It's the Business of Family Business Ownership Program, and it begins in the first quarter of 2018. Go to cmaconsult.com, call 314-721-1860 to see if this program is right for you and your family business. The website every family business should know, cmaconsult.com. Welcome back to The Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. And one last time, the story of Metro Lighting. Bill Frisella and Sarah King join us in studio with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. If you'd like to highlight your family story, we would love to hear it. Reach out to Dan Bean, cmaconsulting.com. Getting other people's opinions for the, you know, get the general managers together, an executive team. Have you found that when you started talking to them that they have any preference of what happens, or are they just basically waiting for you to give your cue of what you'd like to do, Bill?
Well, I think they realize that the operating board is part of the future.
Yeah.
And I think they feel empowered by it. Mm-hmm. They feel part of the decision-making process, and I think they really like it. And I think, you know, we've done this for the last year and a half or 2 years, perhaps, and maybe even longer. And I think it's proved to me that it can work, you know, this operating board moving forward. Now, you know, I've asked Sarah, my daughter, and my son Nick that are involved in the business, and neither one of them want to do what I've done all my life and run the business, I guess. And I don't blame them. I mean, it's a tough job at times. So that's where we are, really.
Yeah.
So we've got some options.
You just have to, sometimes you need to go outside, lay some wire on the sidewalk and think about things for a little while. But you said you've been thinking about this for 10, 15 years. Every business owner, this probably goes through their mind a lot.
I believe you're correct.
Yeah.
You own a business, then maybe the first day you think, what's my exit strategy?
So first day.
It's not like the last 5 years or something. You're always thinking about an exit strategy.
Yeah.
And whether you put it into effect or not, I think, is a big question.
I think that's healthy, the way you think about it. We've talked to other businesses, too, where their exit strategy is when they're dead. So they want to work basically up until the end of their life. But it's probably it's a healthy thing to say. I'm able to continue this, even though I do have family members, it's probably best that we put together a plan to make sure the business is effective after I leave. So
And one of the reasons we created the operating board mm-hmm. is so that the employees, after I'm gone or I retire or get hit by the bus or whatever, so, you know, we've got the 10 family members that are on board. We've got mm-hmm. dedicated employees that have worked there for 30, 40 years, and it can continue. They can continue to be employed. They don't have to worry about, mm-hmm. you know, a new owner letting them go or, you know, reducing their pay or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good plan that could work. Now, that might not be the plan, but it could be one of the plans that would work,
right.
I think.
What about government buildings are always trying to get energy efficient anymore? And you guys were talking about how you've been helping the schools get up to their energy mm-hmm. efficiency. Because if you think about it, these buildings, they have lots of lights in every room. They're mm-hmm. always running all day. Energy efficiency in buildings like that, ultimately important. And you guys are saying that you've been working with some schools to help them mm-hmm. Get up to speed on that sort of thing.
Schools, hospitals, hospitality industry. Everybody has a budget, especially a school. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to be spending it on electricity when you can be spending it on the kids.
Yeah.
So we'll go in and we'll audit the entire building and we'll come up with a plan that we could outfit the entire building with LED, with energy efficient products like sensors. And
oh, yeah.
There's so much that can be done. And a lot of mm-hmm. times there are incentives and rebates that will help pay for these items. So you can outfit your business or a school, and your out of pocket cost is recouped by the energy savings. So
yeah, so if you run a business and you have the lights on all the time, or you have retail or whatever it is, how much money can you save switching over to LED because they run so much more energy efficient?
It depends how many bulbs you have, but each bulb
you looked up in our offices, you immediately looked around.
Yeah. But each bulb that you replace, there's a definite saving. So, you know, if you're in your house and you replace one incandescent bulb with an LED bulb, the savings over the life of that bulb can be up to $150. Mm. So if you think of all the light bulbs you have in your home, times that by how many LED bulbs you replace, and LED bulbs are so inexpensive now, energy savings it's just an amazing amount of money that you can save, and why not do it? And with a building or with a business or a huge warehouse, you know, it's just exponential. So it's just, why not do it, especially with the rebates?
Yeah. How many times, you know, all the dads listening right now, you're always leaving the lights on in the house.
Right.
Always bringing up things like that.
Yeah. Then you don't have to yell at your kids anymore.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. You heard the story of Metro Lighting here today. What are your thoughts that you've heard today?
Well, the first, a very successful business that's grown because they identified three distinct market segments that they could serve. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of synergy across those three. And they put together three separate divisions to serve those three market segments. They have a fourth division, the internal real estate, that just serves the company. Mm-hmm. So they've organized the company very well. One unique thing about them, Bill is a 100% owner, mm-hmm. but there are 10 family members active in the business. Mm-hmm. Usually with that many active family businesses, we would expect to see multiple owners. Mm-hmm. But having one 100% owner of all voting stock means decision making is usually pretty darn clear.
Mm-hmm.
And the last point I would say is, like any family business, and Bill did mention this, you start day one, which I 100% agree with. You start day one trying to think about what is my transition and exit strategy. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to put together a strategy that serves all family businesses well. Take care of the family, take care of my clients, take care of my employees. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, you're going to have a successful transition.
I want to thank Sarah King and Bill Frisella joining us in studio and telling their story of Metro Lighting, another great local and family-owned business here in St. Louis. If you'd like to highlight your family business and the story behind it, we would like to hear it. Reach out to Dan Bean. He's from CMA Consulting. The website is cmaconsult.com. Just let them know you're interested in telling your story. Again, another thank you to Metro Lighting. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. You can find the Business of Family Business online in our past episodes at kmox.com.